live from our national studios here in Accra, networking with all our regional FMs and across the globe on gbcghana.com. We say welcome to Behind the News, our news and current affairs program, where we speak directly to the newsmakers and the experts. My name is Kingsley Odentre. For tonight, we head towards Kumbungu, and in the by-election, what has been happening so far, we'll be talking to our correspondents, who'll be telling us the latest developments. And Supreme Court rules on PNC General Secretary's case on the CI 74. With the election petition case, take a cue when adjourning today. And the new airport for Pram Pram. Have the obstacles been removed? And also, why Municipal Chief Executive gives assurance that the municipality will soon be a cherished destination for domestic aircraft. Why that optimism? He'll be telling us much more and we'll be responding to some accusations coming in his direction. We'll be getting to these issues very soon. Behind the News, you are getting us live in the Northern Region on Radio Savannah, and you're also getting us on Ubunu 96.5. Voting ended about 3 hours ago in the Kumungu by-election to elect a new Member of Parliament for the constituency. The seat became vacant after the resignation of the incumbent MP Alhaji Mohamed Mumuni to take the Secretary General position of the African, Caribbean and Pacific Group of States. The NDC, PPP and CPP contested in the by-election. We have our correspondent Mutala Issa joining us on the line as he expands on what has been happening so far. Mutala, you are welcome to Behind the News.
Thank you very much, Kingsley. Good evening.
Good evening. We understand counting is going on. Do you have some of the bulk areas coming in now?
Yeah, we have various constituencies, polling stations. Most of them are here now at the coalition center, except that they have not taken in the data yet. It is very, very slow, but then it is gradually getting to ahead. It is a keen competition between the NDP and then the CPP. It is not clear who is actually winning now.
Earlier in the day, we heard that there were a few challenges in relation to the biometric verification machine. How are they sorted out?
But that is correct. We had people early in the morning, mostly elderly people, who could not be verified because of their fingerprints, could not be captured by the biometric verification device. Some of them were asked to go home. They came back later in the afternoon. A few of them were able to pass through. They were verified. They voted. Some others could not do. So they were asked to go home and then they were not able to vote.
So apart from that challenge, what is the main problem that might have been encountered, or you think it was a smooth exercise?
It's been generally a very smooth exercise. Turnout has been quite encouraging. I did a sample 5 polling stations, and by my calculation, we had about 60% turnout, and that is quite an encouraging mark. Now, the other thing is that mostly women were those who came out to vote. The men, to some degree, did not turn out to vote. They only came around during this evening when counting actually started at the various polling stations. Security has been very, very tight. We had military and then the police patrol teams going around the entire constituency.
Did you speak to some of the people who failed to turn up as to why they didn't come?
Well, this is the beginning of the farming season in the northern region. You know, this is mostly a man's area. So most of the men, I understand, went to the farm. The elderly men were on their farms doing their normal jobs on the farm. So a few of them, those who could not turn up, I understand, were actually on the farms. Yeah.
When we spoke to the representative of the Regional Police Administration yesterday, he made us understand that they will have a very good security in place. How do you assess the security turnout?
The entire Kumungu township is in black and camouflage. I mean, the police and military presence here is very, very high. And I've not witnessed any incidents throughout the day. I've been here from 6:30 all the way to this time. I've combed the entire constituency, and there's not been any incident recorded in any part, in any polling station today.
Yeah. So you are saying that the military also supported the efforts of the police?
Very, very well. Correct.
Good. Did you find some of the people complaining about having so much security represented on the ground?
No. They were virtually okay. People were allowed to go about their duties normally. There were a few guys who during the close of voting, they went around riding their motorbikes as they would normally do celebrating the end of voting. They were allowed to go about their duties as far as it did not trample upon another person's right. So they rode their motorbikes all right. Everything was normal, except that there was very heavy military and then security presence.
Mm-hmm. From the information you've given to us, the results are trickling in. So from what you are seeing, the trend, do you think the results can be declared anytime soon, within the next...
I believe within the next 2 hours, we should be getting the winner. They should be declaring the winner for Kumungu, in the Kumungu by-elections. Within the next 2 hours, we should be getting the results.
Can you tell us the number of polling stations you have reporting so far?
We have about 8 polling stations that have reported so far, but then the figures that I have here, if you can hold on for a minute for me.
Yeah.
Yes. We have DA primary in the Kumungu Township. DA primary, Kumungu Township, CPP recorded 83 votes. The NDC had 120 votes. DPP recorded 2. There were 3 rejected ballots. Now, turnout was 208, and this is a polling station with a total registered voters number of 304. Now, when you go to Old Court, turnout was 361. We had 2 rejected ballots. DPP recorded 146 votes. NDC had 195. The PPP had 20. Now, when you go to Hyria Islamic Primary, turnout was 601. Total registered votes, 904. The PPP had 245. NDC, 317. The PPP recorded 21 votes and then 18 rejected ballots. So far, this is what I have in my record. We have more than 3 polling stations. We are almost on the 10th polling station now as I speak here.
Good. So how many are you expecting in total?
In total, 74 polling stations for the Kumungu constituency.
Mutala, we want to thank you very much, and we'll be getting to you if need be, maybe before we end the program, technology permitting, I should say.
Thank you very much.
Yes. Mutala is our correspondent in the Northern Ranges, but for now he's in the Kumungu constituency and monitoring the counting of votes in that by-election. You're still live on Behind the News and getting us on Sunrise FM if you're somewhere around Kufuria, and you're also live on Radio Upper West, and that is precisely where we are going. District, municipal, and metropolitan chief executives are expected to represent the president at the local level and facilitate developments within their areas of jurisdiction. For many, there is a level of cooperation needed to achieve the aspirations of their areas, but unfortunately, they meet challenges not directly related to resource mobilization. The WAM municipal chief executive is the latest to have come under a barrage of accusations. We had him joining us earlier in the studio, and he touched on developments within WA and also some of the accusations. So we have joining us in the studio the MCE for WA, Dogu Yakubu. You are warmly welcome.
Thank you very much, my good brother.
How is WA? It's one of the calmest places we always hear.
Indeed,
of.
Indeed.
Changed?
Indeed. WA is very peaceful. It's a very peaceful municipality. You know, it's one of the newly developed cities in the country.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very calm place.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Dekapa, from what we pick from the ground, it appears you are even pushing for a metropolis very soon.
Yeah, by his grace, I think that very soon will be a metropolitan assembly, because WA as a municipality is growing daily with the intervention of various tertiary institutions like UDS, like WAPOLY, College of Education, and what have you. UDS alone has a population of over 12,000. So that is a town or a community by itself.
Yeah.
So I know, at least looking at various factors, we should have qualified for a metropolitan assembly.
Yeah, you've had a 4-year tenure. How would you describe this tenure?
My 4 years as a political administrator, I think it has been very peaceful and very remarkable once the development of the municipality is concerned. And also, at least, the people could appreciate what has the development trend and the stride that we have made within the 4 years across all the areas of endeavor. It could be infrastructural development, it could be roads, it could be energy, it could be health, it could be sanitation, it could be roads, etc., etc. I think that we have done massively well, more especially in respect of education. We have developed a lot of infrastructure at the second cycle level. It will take while secondary technical, which is my former school, I think that it has been changed beyond recognition. We have relocated Islamic Senior High at Bihe. We have also relocated Wa Amas at Chare. I think these places, when you get there, they are infrastructurally developed. And I think that that is tremendous. I also think that if you look at the basic level, you know, it is the policy of the Better Ghana Agenda government to eliminate under 3 schools, which we have, as a municipality, eliminated 21 of them within this short period of time. I think if you go to Gegru, there is one that if you go to School for the Blind, if you go to Shakafatu at Mango, if you go to Nakori, if you go to Pongu, in fact, there are a lot. One must say that if there is any community that benefited or any assembly that benefited from the Better Ghana Cake, I think we have taken about 2/3 of it.
I spoke to another chief executive, and he was of the opinion that no matter how much you say you've progressed or done something for your district or municipality or even the metropolis, there are people, sometimes even from within, who think you've not done so well. And we also pick from the ground that there are some people who are not so comfortable with you because they think you've been autocratic over the period.
Thank you very much. I think that that is the nature of man. No matter your effort, no matter how astronomical your developmental trend, some people still exist as opposition. I think that within the 4 years, it has been something that has never been seen in the history of the municipality. I think that there are people who think that, you know, normally they have a diabolic mind. They give certain comments not because they are facts, but because they have an ill motive. The motive of thinking that you should be replaced by one of them. Yes.
So,
I think that, we are
that
doing well.
You've not gone along with them very well, or they think, oh, now it's time for you to be set aside. That is why they have a few of these challenges. Because if it's coming from an opposing party, fine. But if it comes from within, it raises serious concerns.
My good brother, we are many with many characters. I think that it's not about going along with them well. We are going along with them. If you look at the cooperation that I enjoy from the youth, at least within the 4 years, there have never been anything like people publicly demonstrating their anger or their dissatisfaction against the municipal assembly. I think that it's just natural that some people are never satisfied with things. I also think that, you know, the nature of man is that when he requested for something today from you and you are able to get him that thing, tomorrow if he comes and you are not able, then you become a bad person. Or else, objectively, one should be frank that we have done a lot for the municipality. And also, let me tell you, one person could style himself as security. Somebody could sit anywhere in a corner and write something very nasty against you as an administrator and claim that it's coming from across the youth. Yeah, so sometimes, more especially, when you hear of concerned youth, to me, my experience is that anything like concern is devilish. Well, why is it concern? Because we have youth groups. We have the youth wing. If you have anything to articulate, you humbly channel it through them, through those channels. And that is the structures of the party. But if you go and sit at the periphery of the assembly or the municipality and just draft something and put it out there for the consumption of the public, claiming that you are this and that and that, I think that it's hard time that sometimes when you hear of some names, we take them on. We look for them if actually they exist. And cross-check, because the assemblies exist and operate on checks and balances, because we have various subcommittees that does the work of the assembly, including an executive committee, which normally the MC or the DC presides as the chairman. So whatever is done there, then is channeled through the General House. And if the General House accepts that or endorses that, that is good for the people.
When they talk about corruption, they talk about unproductive four-year tenure and all. You have a challenge with it. That is what you are telling us. Have they presented it directly to you to even respond to them?
No, I don't think. Let me tell you something. When we talk of unproductiveness, well, it's a concept, but I think that as far as I'm a professional teacher, as well as a politician, as far as I know productivity, our assembly within the 4 years under my administration has been highly productive. It is unprecedented. Let me tell you once again that, you know, when one talk about corruption, you just don't sit down and mention it. You must show it by concrete evidence, acceptable evidence, that this person has done this and that. And you can stand anywhere with bare chest that what you are standing on is the truth.
So you believe they are faceless?
These are faceless. These are diabolic-minded people who are out to persecute an innocent, hard-working, humble administrator of one municipal assembly.
Alhaji Diogo Yakubu, so with this, you've spoken about party structures.
Yes.
How have you also used the NDC party structures to call such a group to order? Because they have a name from the information we are picking from the ground. They call themselves, is it a youth group or...
Concern you.
So how are you also using the party structures?
You have used the right term. They are faceless in that... Concern Youth is not a structure within the arrangement, within the hierarchy of the party NDC. There's nothing like that. We have a youth, regional youth organizer. We have two deputies. We have constituency youth organizers. We have two deputies each. And as far as West Central and my assembly is concerned, these people, I go along with them, starting from the chairman, down to the last organizer of the party, even across the wards, across the zones, and what have you. Interestingly, somebody mentioned here that I don't visit any hamlet. I don't know whether there's a specific hamlet that I fear to visit, or else within the assembly, there are, or the municipality, there are some communities, according to their own words, since Adam and Eve, if not me, a high-profile personality has never visited them. And let me tell you, within the municipality, there is no any community that has not gotten a share of the Better Ghana cake. Either it is a new school block, JSS, a new school block for primary, a new school block for KG, it is a road, it is electricity, it is water, it is school feeding, etc., etc. Every community has gotten something like that. If I don't go there, who send them?
So for the sake of the peace, would you be prepared to extend an olive branch, assuming you are getting the people directly? These are the people who seem to be at loggerheads with you. They are not comfortable with your administration, and they want you out, so that, as you said from the beginning, they will have somebody.
I think that we must progress. Mm-hmm. I am a very humble, sportive young man. I ever lost elections in 2005. I was aspiring for the youth regional youth position. Mm-hmm. I lost narrowly to my Kumbo. But after that, I worked with him. People even thought I was the regional youth organizer. So I am always ready to work with anybody who is a productive-minded person, not an enemy of progress. Mm-hmm. Not an enemy of progress.
Some can be converted if you help them to see
if
the
you
light.
You want to be born again. If you are born again, I don't have any problem. We can go together. Mm-hmm. And let me tell you, the impression is indicated as if I ever worked with some group who now turn against me. Mm-hmm. I am an Alhaji. I am a Muslim, not so-called.
So
I don't know anybody like that.
Well, Alhaji Dogo Yakubu has been our guest. Let's look at the other progressive issues for us.
Yeah.
You've been there for 4 years.
Yes.
You've seen the progression.
Yes.
Given consistency for the next 4 years, where do you see we are?
Within the next 4 years, I think that we should have landed on the status of a metropolitan assembly. Mm-hmm. Things are perfectly on course. If it is road network, we are on top. If it is rural electrification, mm-hmm. I think that what is developing, like, you could stand from one angle and look very far until your eyes could not go, could not travel far. I think that we are going to improve upon sanitation. You know, every urban area is characterized by a sanitary problem.
I thought you were aware. I was wrapping up.
Yes. I think that my last meeting with the assembly members, I made them to believe that every electoral area that wants to organize cleanup campaigns and what have you, the assembly is willing to support that assembly member logistically. Mm-hmm. And I will personally be there, other officers and what have you, to carry out that.
We've stressed on this program that now we shouldn't call it waste.
Yes.
It is wealth on its way.
Okay.
If you are managing it very well,
we'll
be following up to see how exactly you
that
are tapping into
that.
That
is true. And
one.
Also, again, let me tell you that within the country Ghana, it is only Upper West that is not having access to air transport. Mm-hmm. And I think that we are working very seriously to ensure that, in fact, we thought this meant it could start.
Yeah.
We were targeting 7th of this month, but it looks as if there are still some few hurdles to be cleared.
Mm-hmm. What are some of these hurdles?
Some of the hurdles are that there has been a complaint by national security and civil aviation that some telecommunication masts are on the airline. And we are pleading with them. We have given them 2 weeks
to
remove them and relocate them. And I think that as I'm talking now, some of them have done that. And we are also to remove some street lights, poles that are around the ring road of the airstrip. I think that I have been assured by the VRA engineer that Thursday they will remove them.
They'll go for media and come back.
So at least if this is put in place, the distance between Upper West, for that matter, Wa Municipal and that of Accra will be narrowed.
We want to thank you very much. The next time we come, maybe we'll be trying to get through to the place by air.
Is very true.
That means
that
we'll be following
true.
Up to see progress on that particular
true.
One.
That is very true.
Thank you so much for joining us
You're
in the studio today
You're
on
welcome.
Behind the News.
You're welcome.
Yes, the MCE for Wa Municipal Chief Executive, Alhaji Dogo Yakubu, has been our guest, and we're responding to a few issues, looking at development of Wa and also some of the challenges coming up when you are in some positions, alleged corruption, unproductive rule and autocratic rule over the 4 years. But You heard exactly what he told us. Behind the news. And you are live on Garden City Radio if you are in Kumasi, and you are also on Radio BAR and also on Unique 95.7 MHz. The obstacles of financial difficulty and land litigation that were challenges confronting governments on the construction of an international airport at Pram will soon be out of the way. The Minister of Transport, Jifa Ativo, today visited the site for the new international airport at Pram to get first-hand information and to discuss with the chief the importance of the project. What was the outcome? We have joining us on the line the media liaison officer at the Transport Ministry to tell us much more about this project and what transpired. You are welcome, Ajit.
Thank you, my brother. How are you doing?
Fine, thank you. It's been some time since we started talking about this airport at Pram. From your visit, does it appear to be moving from the drawing board to the ground any soon?
Clearly, that's exactly the reason for our visit today to the site.
Mm-hmm.
Before I even go on, I want to correct the introductory message you gave. The site is at Ningo and not Pram.
They don't want joined. Thank you.
So we were at the site with the chiefs and elders of Ningo traditionally. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And can you say that everything is really on course? Because there are occasions where some lands are demarcated for some purposes, and before long, you find others encroaching.
Yeah, exactly. You know, at the time the NDC government took office in 2009, January 7, what happened was at the airport, Coast Guard International Airport, the domestic flight that we had operating between Accra, Kumasi, and Tamale was just about two airlines. But as I speak to you now, we have about five airlines operating there. And at the international level, at the time we took office, we had about 16 airlines operating at the KIA, Coast Guard International Airport. But currently, as I speak, we are in the region of about 233 airlines. That tells you there's a significant pressure on Kotoka as compared to the rate in terms of the growth of the airlines. We don't have that same level of expansion in terms of the facilities. So that would actually mean we need to look elsewhere for some new facility to contain the growing pressure on our airport. So exactly the reason why the sector minister, my boss, Mrs. Jifa Ativo, together with a team of experts from the survey department, the lands commission, the Ministry of Roads and Highways, and some directors of the ministry today visited the site together with the chiefs and elders and seriously look at the new location for this new airport that this NDC administration is going out to.
So what was the outcome of the meeting itself?
No, sincerely, you know, one of the major challenges we face in our part of the world when it comes to executing and implementing such major projects is the issue of land acquisition. When the land is not in the hands of the most often in the hands of the traditional leadership. So today we took the to as it were engage the chiefs and the elders of the Ningo area, and for sure the joy of it is that most of the portions of the 16,000 acres of the land that we are going to use as the airport facility, most of it is within the range of the Bundansi area, that is for the Ministry of Defense. And so it simply means that we will not have so much difficulty in engaging the defense ministry to seed the portion that we want to have for the airport. So there's a little of the portion that is still in the hands of the Ningo traditional area. And of course, the chief assured us of their readiness to seed that portion to us. So of course, they know the benefits that any major infrastructure project will bring to the area in terms of the job opportunities for the young people, in terms of the income levels that the people in the area would have access to. So clearly they are more than excited about this project. They are ready to welcome us. They are ready to let government have the land. And therefore, we are more than double sure that this project will surely be a reality and not something that will remain in the pipeline.
So it means the challenge with the traditional authorities is completely out of the way. Is that what
we have
to understand?
For sure. I can sincerely speak without any shadow of doubt that the issue of litigation, the issue of engaging the traditional leadership is something that we have seriously taken care of. Even before today's visit, the Ministry of Transport has, you know, in the past done some engagement with the traditional leadership with regards to acquisition, and I can say that once this is clear, the investors will be more than willing to come down and see how best we can get this project take off. Because one of the major problems we always complain about is the issue of land litigation, which no serious investor wants to involve when there is no peace with regards to the ownership of the land. So, for sure the issue of land is no longer a problem. The only thing we have to do now, which my minister directed the airport company, is to quickly fast-track the process of getting title to meet and the necessary legal documentation so that we can see our way clear and get something going for this major project that would take place.
Since you talk about Bundasi being quite close to the area, does it mean you finished feasibility studies already? So once you've taken out that issue in relation to the traditional authorities, you can completely get to the ground itself and do something?
No, with regards to feasibility studies, we've not yet done that. But one of the major steps is to make sure the land is in your hands before you go out there to do feasibility. So now that we have making some headway with regards to acquisition of the land, clearly the next major thing is to go out there and see to the issue of the master plan, the feasibility studies, and those are the things that would have to go into the work to begin.
Yeah. You've spoken about investors coming in. What plan do you have for it? Is it a PPP or government is going in solely with some credit?
No. Sincerely speaking, a third world country like Ghana cannot afford to fund major capital intensive projects like a new airport project, because as you are aware, the demands on our social sector budget is huge. The issue of health, provision of health facilities, education, you know, housing, and those are the basic things, water for our people, sanitation improvements are major issues that, you know, engages government attention. So issue about airports would be one area that government's commitment will be to provide enabling environment for the private sector to bring in the needed capital. So like the PPP platform which we are operating now, we are inviting the international capital market, the international business community to show a lot of interest, because one of the things we'll be doing is also advertising for interest from investors. So the investors are more than willing, but it is up to us to throw out the information for them to jump at it and keep going. So government is not going to be involved in terms of funds provision, but our involvement is to make sure we secure the land, to make sure there's no litigation with regards to the land, to make sure things are properly in place, so that once the investor starts investing that money, there will be peace and there will be tranquility for the construction to have a peaceful time.
Yeah. Egypt, all things being equal, and from what you are telling us, when do we expect that something concrete will be on the ground there?
I think the concrete step is for us to acquire the land. That is one major area, because one of the biggest, as I said earlier, challenges are land acquisition. So for us to take the major step to make sure we have possession of this land is one huge thing that this government is excited about, that we are getting close to getting the land. And even as I speak, you know, there is still some ongoing projects at KIA, which means we are still expanding to accommodate the growing traffic at KIA. And, you know, airport construction is not one thing that can be done in a day or two. And then you are looking at the next 2, 3, 4 years. But we have to start from somewhere. And that is the first step. And every major milestone that we have to achieve, we need to make the first step. And this is a giant step we make. And clearly, this step is going to take us to Kenya.
So from indications, do you have some of the other interested agencies not within this country already showing that level of keen interest to be part of it immediately?
Yeah, for sure. Like I said earlier, you know, our democratic environment is one fantastic one. The economic growth is now huge. The potential for this country is extremely exciting. The international community, and to the fact that Ghana is now an oil-producing country, is an added advantage. So all we have to do is to tell the investor community we are ready, and they are more than willing to invest their capital, because every business person is ready to go to where his or her business is secured and the profit is safe. So Ghana offers that opportunity to the investor community, and so they are more than willing and ready to come and invest their capital in an economy that is growing at the average rate of 8%, one huge record that we have in this sub-region and even on the African continent. So we as a country offer the best opportunity under the National Democratic Congress government of His Excellency John Mahama to push our agenda of this Better Ghana message forward to its logical conclusion. That's exactly what we are here to do.
Leaving that one, at least we are using one for now, and you've just mentioned the fact that some expansion works are taking place on it. Where are we with it in terms of its modernization?
For sure, the modernization, airports business is not an event. It's something that is always ongoing, because day in, day out, as I said earlier, in 4 years ago, we had only two domestic airlines, Amtrak and one other, Citylink, operating at KIA. But as I speak, there are five. That tells you traffic is growing. That tells you more people are traveling. That tells you there's competition. And once there's competition, prices are now down. It's now cheaper to travel to Kumasi by air than to sit in your own vehicle, fuel the car, travel, looking at wear and tear. So there's a lot of growing interest in the aviation industry. And that means, as a country, we need not to wait to be taking, you know, for events to overcome us. We have to prepare ourselves. We have to make sure we are always ever ready. So the ongoing work at Kotoka is always there. We are expanding the terminal. We are expanding where the lodging, every facility at Kotoka is seeing some improvement in anticipation of the growing traffic. And nevertheless, we also have to keep our eye on the new airport, which we located a site at Ningo. Like I said earlier, with the growth of this economy, we need to prepare ourselves that in 5 to 6, 7, 8 years time, what kind of situation will be if we still have to be managing with Kotoka. Even as I speak to you now, it's a lot of pressure on Kotoka. So we are just preparing for the kind of growth that this government is pushing through, for the kind of expansion that we are seeing in the economy. So the ongoing thing at Kotoka is still there, but we will have to look at it. So even as I speak to you now, Tamale is undergoing major transformation to become an international airport. We have the contractors outside, the Brazilians who are managing that facility, expanding it. Kumasi is soon going to start seeing a major expansion with the provision of ground lights, with the provision of new runway and all of that. What it simply means is this administration is giving a lot of attention to the aviation industry, knowing very well its importance in our socio-economic development, knowing very well its critical role in promoting tourism, which is the third largest foreign exchange earner for this country. So clearly, we are more than poised to transform the sector and to make it the hub of this sub-region. And the hub concept will simply mean this administration, this government, will not sleep. My minister is working 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, to make sure the hub concept becomes reality and Ghana becomes the transportation hub for this sub-region, so that we take a proper role in the Committee of Nations in terms of the aviation sector.
You spoke about Kumasi. Does that mean that anything you want to do now is not ongoing because you are not on the ground yet?
You are talking about Kumasi?
Yes.
No. Just last week, the CEO of Airport Company, Mrs. Doreen Fianco, was there together with the KMA boss to inspect, you know, to kickstart the rehabilitation of Kumasi Airport. His Excellency has promised to make sure we give Kumasi a serious facelift, because it contributes hugely to our growth in the aviation industry. It's one of the destinations for the local airline. So we would make sure Kumasi is giving a serious facelift. So for as we speak now, Kumasi doesn't operate at night, simply because there's no ground lighting for the airlines for the aircraft to operate at night. So as I speak to you now, we are working hard to make sure the new runway we are building comes with ground light, so that Kumasi can see 24-hour service in terms of operation. So that's exactly what is happening. So there's something going on at Kumasi in terms of our preparatory stages to kickstart the project to give Kumasi another runway that will come with a ground lighting.
Okay. There's been some concern about aviation oil in recent times. And
yeah, you mean aviation fuel? Okay.
What has been happening? Because some are saying that it's affecting the fares, especially for domestic airlines, and still the fare is still high.
For sure. It's been a major challenge for government. Unfortunately, through serious engagement from my boss, the sector minister, and that of Ministry of Energy and the Petroleum Authority, we've managed to bring down the cost of jet fuel, I mean aviation fuel, to 20% lower than the price as it was before April 2nd. So as I speak to you now, we have done our part as government in all of our efforts to provide the enabling environment for the private sector to thrive, in all our efforts to provide the necessary infrastructure. One of the things we can do is to make sure we do a thing like this, and that's exactly what we have done. And today my boss directed the CEO of airport company and then the DG for the civil aviation to make sure that the airlines seriously respond to the gesture from government by bringing down the aviation fuel. Because one of the biggest challenge is like they complain that fuel, you know, forms about 30 to 35% of the operational cost, and therefore any effort by government to bring down fuel, we should have a corresponding effort from the airlines to bring down prices so that our traveling public can have a good prices for the tickets. And also that would promote our tourism because more people want to travel to Ghana once their fares are down. You know, recently Namibia Airlines has threatened to withdraw from Ghana because of aviation fuel issue. But once government has brought the fuel costs down, they have, you know, decided to stay now instead of going away. And that means a lot for this economy. And so we also expect the airlines to reciprocate the government's gesture by also bringing down fares. This is a challenge that my minister is trying to the airlines to respond appropriately so that our traveling public will have a fair share of the government's gesture and government's commitment to make air travel very, very cheap as we want it to be.
Well, I want to thank you very much for updating us on this particular one, Egypt Kudoto. Thank you so much for your time.
You are sincerely welcome and thanks for the opportunity.
Egypt Kudoto is the media liaison officer at the Transport Ministry. You are still live on Behind the News, and one of the interesting tests just received, I'll call the person KD, and they're saying that when sharing the Guinea files or any other way, think about me. I think something of that sort. I didn't get the full one, but good evening to you who sent it. It's a bit of an interesting one in relation to the YMCE. Well, we are moving on. You are still live on Behind the News, and you are getting us on Twin City Radio, and you are also live on Radio Central. There appears to be a window of opportunity for the parties involved in the ongoing election petition case at the Supreme Court. Whichever way the verdict goes, the aggrieved party can further appeal the ruling. This follows the ruling by the Supreme Court on the writ filed by PNC General Secretary Bernard Mona, seeking to nullify portions of Constitutional Instrument 74 and Rule 71B, which states that a decision of the Supreme Court with regard to a petition to challenge the election of a president cannot be reviewed. However, the five-member panel that sat on the case today upheld arguments raised by lawyers of Mr. Mona that will seek to abolish the constitutional right in Article 133 of the Constitution for a review of a decision of the Supreme Court in presidential election petitions, and therefore unconstitutional, null, and void. The Supreme Court also ruled that a sitting of the Supreme Court on daily basis, including public holidays, as unconstitutional, which goes against the Public Holiday Act, should be looked at. So what does all this mean? We have joining us on the line lawyer Amaliba to talk on the issues. But first, the one who sent the petition, Bernard Mona, will be telling us about his case. Hello, Bernard.
Hello, sir.
Good evening.
Good evening, sir.
Why did you decide to take up the matter in the first place? Many thought it was finished and done with.
Well, it's important for me to commend my team of lawyers who made this possible. They stood for me when others thought that insults, aspersions, vituperation, and innuendos could be the order of the day. My lawyers kept fortifying me that I had a good cause and that we should pursue it to its logical conclusion. This started with Dr. Raymond Atugba, and when he got other assignments, he stepped down for Benson Nushupu, Joel Ano Afari, and Ramona Abugabe. And these three people did a good job, including Alhaji Hudi Yaya, and at the end of the day, the Supreme Court has positioned what we took to court. Indeed, there was sense in it, and for me, I conclude that it's not a Bernard Mona's victory. It is a victory for the rule of law. It is a victory and democratic order for the people of Ghana.
Some are saying that in cases like this, they want the case to be finished quickly and done with. And they're asking, if it is to go for appeal and others will be appealing against the decision again, is that not going to drag it?
You are saying that justice should be rushed and that in dispensing, look for the quick and easiest way to get it done. And whether it is done rightly or wrongly, you just want to clear the tables and then you are done with. I'm not sure that that is what we are looking for. We are looking can have confidence in. We are looking for a justice delivery in which all of us will be satisfied that left, right, or center, there is an issue or there is no issue. In jurisdictions where they want these issues dispensed quickly, they have put time limits on it. Go to the United States of America, and they have put a time limit on it. It has to be made before the president is sworn in. That is the case of George Bush and Al Gore, had to be determined before the Supreme Court, George Bush was sworn in.
Yeah.
You understand? If you come to Kenya, they had to put time limitation to ensure that Uhuru versus Odinga, that the case had to be dispensed before a president is sworn in. In the case of Ghana, a president has been sworn in by the Chief Justice and his retinue of judges, that the president is performing his functions. Until the Supreme Court determines otherwise, the president is functioning, has not come to a standstill. We have a president who is assembled, he's sitting with. So where are we to? We are comparing ourselves to countries where our laws and their laws are not the same. In any I'm not sure that by this ruling, it means that the judges can decide to go on honeymoon and come. What it simply means is that we are saying that it's not to an act of parliament. How can the rules of court committee, establish the CIs, important than a parliamentary enactment, which is the Act 601, which is the Public Holidays Act? Certainly that cannot happen. Not take it to court. It means a lot.
Hello, Bernard. I think we are losing you by your position. If you can adjust yourself a little to help us. Oh, that's unfortunate. We lost Bernard Mona on the line. He sent the case to the Supreme Court to decide on portions of CI 74. But Abraham Amaliba is a member of the NDC legal team and is also joining us on the line. Hello, Abraham.
Hello.
Are you elated by that ruling?
I'm excited that at least the rule of law is reigning and that our democratic dispensation is flourishing.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that a citizen of Ghana can go to court and have the court, the Supreme Court, see eye to eye with him and then rule in favor of the applicant. I think that as a nation, we are growing, and as a nation, it means that we are beginning to test our laws. Those who were of the view that Bernard Mona was stoking the fires and that Bernard Mona is a rabble-rouser would now come to their senses and know that the rule of law requires that when a citizen of Ghana finds that there's something wrong with a legislation, they have the right under the Constitution to go to the Supreme Court for interpretation. So I'm happy for the rule of law and happy for the democratic dispensation.
Some are looking at it with the eye of the present case at the Supreme Court and saying that it will just open the avenue for many more legal battles that might not end soon. You don't see it that way at all?
It is important to indicate that the rule of law also requires that decisions must be taken in accordance with law. It also requires that substance is as important as procedure. And so if the Constitution, which is the highest law of the land, has given us the procedures that we have to follow so as to arrive at justice, who are we then to say that we want matters to be expedited? So we should cut short some of the procedures just because we want matters to be expedited. No. The expedition of a matter also requires that you follow the procedure religiously to the conclusion. And so it is not for anybody to say that because this will open the Pandora's box for people to also change the law, we should close the chapter on this. No, it only tells us that anybody who also feels aggrieved or dissatisfied with any of our laws can go to court, and that, for me, makes us a nation of laws rather than picking up arms and cutlasses and cudgels hitting at each other. Rather, let's change the law.
Abraham, please hold on the line. We have on the other line now Mike Okwe Jr., a member of the NPP legal team. Mike, you are welcome. Oh, that's unfortunate. We lost Mike Okwe on that line. We'll try to raise him. But, Abraham, coming back to you, at least from what is going on and from all that we've heard, some are saying that, oh, it was even sponsored by the NDC and using a different avenue so that there will be an avenue for you in other areas of the present case. Is that a situation?
I'm surprised if anybody says that this was sponsored by the NDC. The person who went to court, the applicant, is a known member of the PNC. And in fact, the general secretary of the PNC, a political party that is registered under the laws of Ghana. Now, to then say that that person was acting on behalf of the NDC, is, for me, to say the least, disingenuous. We are talking about a Ghanaian who has seen some mischief in the law, which he wants to cure. If he goes to court and the court has upheld his argument, why would we want to connect the NDC to it? On this matter, if the NDC is connected to this, I would say that it's a welcome news, because the Supreme Court, the highest court of the land, has seen eye to eye with what the NDC has done.
Good. I'll come back to you. Michael Kwe has rejoined us. So sorry we lost you earlier. But generally, what do you say about the ruling today? I guess there is a major challenge on Michael Kwe's line. But Abraham, do you think the Supreme Court took a cue today in adjourning the case that was pending before it?
Yeah, it is expected that once the ruling came today by the five justices, and once it is coming from the Supreme Court, which is also sitting on the election petition, one would come to a conclusion that this ruling was brought to their notice, and as a result, they will not be seen violating their own ruling. And so I am of the view that steps were taken to bring this ruling to their attention. And don't forget that this ruling was given before the election petition started. The hearing continued. And so the five justices who gave that ruling, steps would have been taken to inform the nine justices who are currently sitting on the petition.
Okay.
And so to ensure that they are in conformity with their own ruling, they will not act in ways that would suggest that they are going against their own ruling.
Abraham, we're having a bit of a challenge with Michael Kwe's line, but please hold on. Let's try again this time around. Let's see if we succeed. Hello, Mike. Do we have you this time?
Yes, you do.
Yes. What's your general impression about the ruling?
Oh, my general impression is that it is a ruling that follows the Constitution. I don't think that there's any problem with it at all. What I love about this country is where somebody goes to court to test the law, to see how the Constitution would decide or affect certain administrative or constitutional instruments, as was the case in this instance. So I am very glad that the matter is settled once and for all. Whatever the outcome of the petition, the petitioner or the respondent have the option of a review, which is in line with the Constitution. In any case, what we noticed was that the courts were sitting on Mondays to Thursdays anyway. There wasn't any weekends being used. So tomorrow being a bank holiday, we're looking forward to a restful day. I think if all the lawyers and the judges will agree with me, a holiday in between is not necessarily going to delay the case any much further to the extent that it would affect it in any way. So I think that it's a welcome ruling. It has made everything much clearer. There's more clarity with regard to how people would know what to do or what not to do after the final ruling. So it is welcome, and I think that we will not substitute the issue of delay to compromise ourselves, i.e. because we are thinking of delay so much, we actually don't look at the other issues, which, for example, are what I would say constitutional matters. So on that premise alone, I welcome the decision.
So you believe it is rather helping to sharpen the constitution and helping people to appreciate it much more than just reducing it to some politics here and there?
Oh, well, I mean, for me, anybody who limited to politics here or there, I would say that they don't understand the issues. Let us be clear. Me as a petitioner, because that's the path that I am, I'm on, I may be very happy to have a review. The respondents too may be very happy to have a review. So if anybody is necessarily jubilating on a review, then maybe they are worried that they are going to lose the case anyway. And so the review is the only option for them to be able to get a better ruling if they have a second chance. And the second chance, as we all know, in this case, with every review, there are more judges. Now everybody will start looking at those new judges. Oh, are they people who are likely to be this or likely to be that? We all know how we look upon the bench. Mm-hmm. Whether it's an issue of even being conservative or not, you can tell that because of somebody's conservatism, they might not vote for or they might vote against abortion, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
So if somebody is very conservative, what they might tend to do is to uphold the status quo, i.e. the first ruling, let it hold. But if they are more liberal, maybe they might swing at the review stage. So these are all things that might come into play later. But for now, really, whether it's petitioners or respondents, Bernard Bonner's case doesn't really affect anyone because we all want the Constitution to work. Our case is based on the Constitution. So we are going to use the Constitution to work. So there's no problem at all. As far as I'm concerned, the case continues unabated. It was a very good day in court today to see the reasoning behind the judge's decision. It was fantastic. And I think everybody agrees that we don't need to sit on the bank holidays, especially for this trial. As to whether ever, I am not too sure, because there might be a certain emergency, a certain situation might happen on a bank holiday before a crucial day. So should that also be looked at? I didn't know then. But for now, the bank holiday doesn't matter, and the review doesn't matter as well.
Maybe every case will be taken on its own merit and looked at.
This is the kind of ruling that is blanket.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, every case, when the Supreme Court decides, there should be a review. That is blanket.
Good. So let me just quiz you a little bit. We are entering a speculative realm.
Yes,
assuming the case does not go in your favor, you believe that Bernard Modas opened the way for you to go for a review?
That's what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. That this is a stage where the review can benefit anyone. When you try to jubilate unnecessarily, then that means the person knows in advance that they are going to lose.
Mm-hmm.
But what we are saying is that the review option is there.
Mm-hmm.
It's there for anyone who may choose to use it.
Okay.
So for me, when I go to court, I don't go to lose.
Mm-hmm.
I go to not just win the case, but I go to win the appeal or the review that may follow as well.
Okay.
So when I go to the High Court, I'm not scared that it would go on appeal to the Court of Appeal.
Michael Kwe, because of our time, we'll leave it here for now. I want to thank you very much for your time.
Okay.
Sincere apologies for the earlier hitches.
And a very good day to my brother and my mother also.
Yes, I'm wrapping up with him. Abraham, your quick word on today's proceedings.
Yes, today has gone well. Cross-examination has three purposes. First is to discredit the witness. Second is to, as it were, punch holes or show inconsistencies in the witness's case. And thirdly is to test the veracity of the witness's case. We have largely achieved these things by cross-examining Bawumia. And I'm sure on Thursday, Judge Chukwuka will continue to punch more holes in his evidence.
Thank you very much. Abraham Amaliba is a member of the NDC legal team. Earlier you heard from Michael Kwe Jr., a member of the MPP legal team. And this is where we have to wrap it up for today. Isaac Yawedu sat at the controls for us. Production team Christopher Siedu, Bright Agama, and Felix Kofi. Jonathan Thompson handled the news summaries for us. And my name is Kingsley of Interest.